Audio courtesy of TNT. You don't have to fix 34-6.
Oh, I like that.
You like it?
I was going to say, hey, can't win them all. And then
think, that don't rhyme well,
with
6.
It doesn't rhyme, but it's more of like a football chant. Mm-hmm. Like a, here we go, Brownies. There's no rhyme there.
No,
but
there
it
is
works.
No rhyme.
However, I like yours. I think yours is good. Because it does,
you can't
it does
win
rhyme.
Them all. You can't win them all.
No, no. That was more, can't win them all.
Oh.
Can't win them all.
No, I
but,
know.
But yours does
you
rhyme.
You don't have to fix 34-6.
But do people not want to chant after losses?
I don't know. My mentions are a complete disaster. So I.
Well, this is what happens when we ever build up regular season games. Because then if we're going to build them up and tell you they mean something, and then teams like they can in the NBA, even the best teams, just ask the Celtics, who have been a 500 team over the last 14 games, when you build up regular season games and they lose, it's like, well, what do we do when the Browns lose? We lose our minds for all week. Well, does that feel like a Browns loss, so now we have to treat it like such? Or can we just treat it like the NBA where, yeah, bad games, had a bad game. It was a terrible game.
Well, I thought it was just a bad game.
Yeah.
And immediately, because I said earlier this week, I said, we don't need to make trades. I don't want to hear about the trade deadline. I think that they've earned the right to either do a great job in the postseason, win the NBA Finals, or they've earned the right to let me down in the postseason. And I understand that what happens during the game changes after the game, 12 hours after the game, you know, whatever. There was a lot of people that I just went, all right, I'm putting the phone away and I'm going to let the rest of the first half just wash over me. And that's what happened. And then the rest of the game was just a disaster. There is something, though, I got to run something by you here before I shoot my mouth off. Because, one, I do think it's going to work out better for a Cavs fan overall. I don't think fans in general, especially in the Midwest, especially a fan of the Cleveland Cavaliers, with our history, with who we've had in the past and how we've won our championship in 2016, I don't think we do well being a favorite. I don't think we do well at all being the favorite. I don't think we're comfortable there. I don't think we like being there. It's very, very hard. We're not at the mountaintop, but it's extremely hard to stand at the mountaintop and keep everybody away. When you're on the chase, it's a much more natural thing to do. You're desiring something. You're striving for something. Think of all the sports movies you've ever seen, every cliche you've ever had. You're always coming from the underdog perspective. So when they beat Oklahoma City last week and you're the best team in the NBA, I think a lot of people are a lot more comfortable after this assing, and it was an assing that happened last night against Oklahoma City. I think a lot more people are where they need to be going, all right, because if you break it down, guys, they're 34-6. They're still a really, really, really good basketball team. But there's certainly things that you would have to go, okay, what can we address instead of just, hey, everything's perfect and everything's fine. I did find it ironic that after George came on with us yesterday, and you could hear that interview, 92.3thefan.com. I don't know if after a loss like that you'd really want to, but either way, 92.3thefan.com. George Yang was on with us yesterday and talked about the calm demeanor of Kenny, and then he got teed up in the first half for yelling at refs, cussing at refs. I'm sure he didn't tell him to have a nice night.
We hadn't really seen that, and yeah, George Yang went to, and I even typed in our little communication engine during the interview, and I'm like, Kenny, was that a shot at Bickerstaff?
I didn't want to. I think maybe it would have hung up on us if we would have said that, but I'm like, well, yeah, he kind of moved on. But I just found it odd that he's so calm, he's so collected, and we don't need to sit there and yell at the refs all the time. And it came off your question about the referee who was quick to tee people up and throw people out of games earlier this week, or last week, I should say. Mm-hmm. And to hear him say, well, Kenny's so much more calm, and then he gets teed up in the first half. When he got teed up, I go, this thing's out of control. This is at one point they had more turnovers than they had made field goals. It was a bad night at the office. I do wonder if Donovan Mitchell struggles against Oklahoma City and it's a bad matchup. I have to ask. 11 points the other night last week, but he finished with 8. But I'm sure you're not really playing him in the second half that much. You're kind of running around. I don't know exactly what you're trying to accomplished there is you're just, I mean, it's a total beating. So I don't know how much I can glean from that. I mean, he only played 21 minutes last night, for crying out loud. I didn't even see him in the second half. Of course, I was kind of just writing some things down in the second half, and it was just kind of playing in the background, I will admit. But when you got a guy who was 3-16 last week against Oklahoma City, then 3-15 this week against Oklahoma City, we're going to have Danny Cunningham in studio at 8:40. I'm going to have to ask him that question.
Well,
is there a matchup problem here, even without the bigs of Isaiah Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren that we don't know about?
Which I think that was the big surprise, because if we were diagnosing a blueprint to beat the Thunder, a team we had already beat, and now you just took away another piece and their lone rim protector, their lone physical presence that's, you know, taller than 6'6", we would have said that, hey, just go inside. Just go inside. Beat the hell out of them. You know, Evan was able to do that in that first game, especially when Hartenstein got in foul trouble. We didn't have to worry about him. So it was going to be a bunch of undersized, and I mean, I say undersized relatively, I mean, compared to Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. Mm-hmm. They're going to be undersized guys, you know, trying to defend you, guys that were 6 inches shorter than you. So the Cavs, I thought yesterday, I'm like, man, could Evan Mobley get 30 tonight? Could he get 40? Because I did not think, even as prideful as Oklahoma City is, and they are right now, as of today, the favorites on every website to win the NBA championship. So I'm not trying to make them seem like a plucky underdog. Like, but they have heart, and they've been playing without Chet Holmgren this whole time. I was wondering, how are we going to kick their ass? Like, get it down low and do everything you can. What did we end up doing? We couldn't do it because we were harassed to such an extent. Our guards were fumbling the ball, turning the ball over. Evan was getting sloppy with his handle, kind of like last year. We would see that from time to time against mm-hmm. physical, longer teams. And it was kind of a nightmarish scenario. And they just could not get the ball where it needed to be on the court to be able to hammer home their advantage, their size advantage. Yes, they plus. Lou Dort, right now, he is in Donovan Mitchell's head. He just is. And then, of course, Dort, what did he do from 3-point line? 6 of 9, which, you know, they shot lights out in the first three quarters. They shot lights out. In garbage time, the numbers came a little back down to normal. But Dort had him just suffocating defense. And it's both games. And Donovan really struggled with it because Donovan's not used to having guys around the league that can do that to him. There's only maybe a handful of guys that can do it. And Dort, the numbers, you know, I saw somebody had posted I wish I could give credit. Somebody posted the numbers of that matchup over the last few years. It is not pretty for Donovan. It's clearly the guy that gives him the most trouble.
I want to hear, Charles Barkley was speaking about this. He was pretty disappointed in the Cavs' output yesterday.
You play 82 games. There's about maybe 10 be like, okay, we're playing a great team. We could play this team in the finals. Like that last game last week in Cleveland, that was a barn burner. I'm surprised the Cavs didn't know they were going to come out and get punched in the mouth. And then they were not aggressive. They were just getting hit with flurries and backing up. And they didn't try to establish no inside game. That's what it says. You know, Jared Allen is 3 for 3. He should have had more than 3 shots. So I'm not sure what they were expecting tonight.
He's right about that, audio courtesy at TNT. I mean, fans were begging them to throw the ball to the block, and there was very little attempt at that. And it's like, okay, are we gonna only win a game one way? Because you didn't really do that last week. You threw the ball inside. There was great, and I thought there was great paint passing from Jared Allen to Evan Mobley, vice versa. Like, you threw the ball inside, and then, again, without Isaiah Hartenstein, like, I'm reading before the game last night, like, they're talking about it's a calf injury. Like, this is going to linger for Hartenstein, and they're talking about trade possibilities there with centers so they can clog things up so they don't get killed inside. And then last night, you don't even try to attempt to attack anything through the paint, which is unacceptable for a Cavs fan. And so I would think, like, Kenny Atkinson has to know that. So I kind of want to know, do I chalk it up to a bad night? Yeah. Is there a real problem here?
Yeah, I mean, yes, you 100% chalk it up to a bad night.
Then let me ask you this.
It's not that the Cavs are the most perfect team of all time. They've played like it for most of the year. They've got some weaknesses. We've known what those weaknesses are. It's just, who the hell's been able to
Exactly. Well, we kind of know what the weaknesses are, or we've heard what the weaknesses are from, like, Kenny after a rare loss. But I can't labor on it because you're so good. And I'm going, what am I going to do? Am I going to sit here and root for this team to lose just so I can find a weakness of some sort? Like, I don't want to do something like that. I asked you, like, it was last night a bad night. Then I think I got a problem with something here, because I'm going around the internet this morning. I woke up and I'm reading four major websites, ESPN, CBS, The Athletic, the whole thing. And it all kind of says the same thing. It all, you know, the game wasn't even as close as it was, and it, as the final score would indicate, yeah, that's true. And the Thunder are the real team that cements who the best team is in the NBA. Brad Botkin, CBS. I know not a lot of people know that name, but it's just CBS right there at the top. Thunder cement status as NBA title favorite by destroying Cavs, and they still have room for improvement. I mean, it is. I've started to have a problem here. Because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great player. He scored 40 points. And so if you think that this is sour grapes, I may stand down. I may get really upset later in the show, but I may stand down. We'll see where it goes. We're looking for the next star. This guy's good. He's a really good player. And our guy has not played that well against Oklahoma City in these last two games. Not well at all. Do I just have to sit here and take this? Or am I like, man, all of a sudden Oklahoma City's the cat's ass and we're nothing? We are nothing. Yeah, we are wanting. This is a league, like, your other best rated game was between two guys approaching 40. A guy who is 40 and another guy who's approaching 40. Mm. And Steph Curry and LeBron James. We're looking to hand off the mantle to somebody. Zion Williamson is just going to ass off and be out of the league, it seems. He doesn't even want to bother with being with greatness being a torchbearer for this. Like, I wonder
what do you specifically object to?
If Gilgeous-Alexander is undeniable, fine, and I'm not taking anything away from his play, but all of a sudden, last week, I got nothing. You, me, Cleveland, we're whooping it up. We're talking big about Cleveland. And then here it's, the Oklahoma City Thunder are establishing their dominance. The Oklahoma City Thunder with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they are the ones who are the favorites for it. The Cavaliers can't stand. The Cavaliers have problems. The Cavaliers have to fix things. I'm going, they're 34-6. And I just asked you, are we looking at just a rough night, or are there really serious issues here? So is it one way or the other?
No, I don't.
It can't be both.
I don't think
can't
there
be
are
both now.
Serious issues with the Cavs. My only question.
Maybe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is that much better than everybody else.
Well, he's the leading scorer in the league.
Fine.
He's the most consistent player in the league. Every game over the last 2 years, it's been around 30 points. I mean, he just doesn't have clunkers. Because his skill level is such, he's got that height that Donovan doesn't have. And so that's one of your, if you're asking me serious problems, no, I mean, we know that Donovan Mitchell has all-time great playoff games. He also is kind of runs hot and cold because it's tough for someone his size to consistently take over the biggest games because he's always got to make up for, you know, that lack of size. Now, Donovan does do that. Darius is the other one. Now, Darius put on a show in that second quarter yesterday. He did start the game out with some careless turnovers and some struggles that really prevented them from getting going and certainly fed into the Oklahoma City establishing their dominance early in that game. I have been on the side of, man, this is so good. This has been so great. The confidence of Donovan and Darius, the way that Donovan is willing to share the spotlight with this young team, that's the stuff that's going to be huge because Donovan doesn't need to score 30 every night. We certainly know if he wants to with the shot selection, he could ramp that up and he could get his numbers up so that he could be considered for an MVP. He doesn't care about that stuff, which I think plays in the long haul better for the Cavs. So I'm not worried about that. In the end, though, what I'm worried about are the same things that stubborn me would worry about anyway. Two small guards. How could two small guards advance in a more physical postseason? Because you saw yesterday, Oklahoma City was allowed to be more physical than they were in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And that paid huge dividends. And that really threw a wrench into the whole game plan for Kenny Atkinson.
So I'm going to ask later, you know, is this a bad night or are there actually problems with the Cavs? And I'm going to have to ask Danny Cunningham about that coming up at 8:40 because there's definitely people drawing conclusions going, wait a minute, Indiana, what did they do to you last weekend? What did they do to you, even though you won, what did they do to you the other night? And now you have this Oklahoma City team, who is one of the two, three best teams in the NBA, and what they did to you last night. But I'm going, you've refused to throw the ball to the block. If you refuse to do that, how can I make a sane argument for you? And then I look at what the stats are, and I go, this is a bad night. It's a bad night. If we want to crown Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as the torchbearer, fine. The league needs stars. It's a league built on stars. I'll do that. I don't want to have my head too far up my ass and deny somebody their greatness as a person who could carry this league. But Lord Almighty, I read none of this when the Cavaliers won last week. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit bitter about it.
Now, the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Typically, Ken, in today's day and age in basketball, we go right to the box score. We look at three-point shooting, and we always talk about that being the difference. And yesterday, the Cavs were 13 of 42. Meanwhile, Oklahoma City, they went cold in the fourth when the game was over, but they had 18 makes, so they had the edge behind the three-point line. But that wasn't the stat that I think spoke to me and was the most telling. It was turnovers. And Oklahoma City only turned the ball over six times. The Cavs were 21. 21. You're just going to win zero of those games. If there's anything approaching that,
terrible.
The rest of the way, you can just chalk it up to a loss. Doesn't even matter. It's really tough to even shoot your way out of that. And that was the issue, I think, coming out of the gates yesterday, very early on. Big reason, and we told you this last week before they played Oklahoma City the very first time, Nobody has more defenders. Nobody has more length and physicality, especially if the officials are going to allow it, than Oklahoma City. And it's something that Kenny Atkinson acknowledged after the game.
It felt like seven pit bulls out there, you know, not five, seven. And they were clawing and scratching and reaching and in a good sense, right? Like they were just, their speed and athleticism, you know, they kind of toppled us over. I mean, it was that simple.
So I don't understand. I see people online. Well, that's what's going to happen in the playoffs. Nobody has the personnel that Oklahoma City has until you get to potentially Oklahoma City in the finals, which would be awesome if we get to play Oklahoma City in the finals, because it means that we vanquished the Boston Celtics, most likely. Boston is the other team that has a bunch of guys that they can throw at Darius and Donovan, but nothing like the Thunder. The Thunder is at a completely different level. So, Kenny, that's partly why I'm not losing my mind. They're 34-6, and we've beaten all the good teams this year.
I don't really worry. I worry about, you know, if I'm taking it too easy, I guess. I worry about that. But the only everything else, it's like
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Gosh, they're 34-6. I got to beat Boston before I get to Oklahoma City again. I did just remember OK Klee?
Yes.
It's part of history we'd rather forget. Now, what happens if we play Oklahoma City in the finals? What do we do with that? Have any of the t-shirt companies thought about this?
Oof. Well, there was also the Mavaliers. Don't forget about that.
Well, if we play Dallas in the finals, we'll discuss that. Now, we have an interesting history with Kyrie Irving, but yeah. One step at a time here.
Moving on, as we are getting closer to the national championship game on Monday night. Truth be told, Kenny, I wish that game was tonight.
Yeah,
I know they would. I know they wouldn't want to do that, even though I think they'd get a higher rating tonight than they would get on Monday. Am I wrong on that? Maybe some network executives would say I'm wrong.
I always thought they would, but a thing's been going on forever. And somebody brought up that they should do it. They should have done it last night because of the inauguration on Monday. And I'm like, well, President Trump's a pretty big football fan. I think he's perfectly fine with, should say President-elect Trump, soon to be President Trump. By the time that game goes down, he's going to be president. He's a pretty big football fan. I think he'd be fine with the kickoff.
Is the inauguration during the day?
Yes.
So what does that have to do with the national championship?
I don't know. Apparently it takes it away. Takes away some of the focus on the inauguration.
All right.
He might be missing it, because don't you have a ball afterwards?
Oh, I'm sure there is. I think he's been having a ball since the election. This game is rapidly approaching, and I wouldn't call it a war of words, because I think there is a lot of mutual respect between these two teams, maybe not with Lou Holtz and Ryan Day, but between these two teams, especially the Marcus Freeman situation, being a former Buckeye. But there's been a lot of talk, will Notre Dame have the courage to play man-to-man defense, which is what they've done all year? Texas did not, and it worked out for them. They had that game very, very close into the fourth quarter, and Jeremiah Smith was not to be heard from because of that bracketed zone coverage. Well, Leonard Moore, a fantastic All-American freshman corner from Notre Dame, he told you exactly what they plan to do.
I think definitely a lot of teams have went to the zone mindset with playing them. I think Penn State played at least a man, because that's their identity. But I think that going into this game, we're not going to change who we are. We're going to play man coverage like we do every week. We're going to go out there and challenge the receivers.
Now, you would think that would be music to the ears of Chip Kelly, Jeremiah Smith, Will Howard, and the Buckeyes. Kenny, is this a mind game? Are they telling you what they're going to do? Remember, Brady Quinn came on with us and said,
they will
show you man. They will play man. But they also have a lot of ways they can deviate off of that.
If you guys play man against Ohio State, you have signed your own death warrant.
Is that like Ohio State running the football between the tackles against Michigan?
Yes. If you go ahead and you do that, you see how that works out. You play man. Hey, you got great athletes. You got much better athletes than you've had in a long time. And I agree with Brady Quinn. Jeremiah Love, arguably, I don't think he's the best, arguably the best running back in college football. He's had those injuries. You got great players, but come on, guys. Let's not be silly. You're going to have to bracket. You're going to have to do some things here.
Because, you know, Jeremiah Smith heard that, and it's like, whoa, all right, because he had no chance last week.
Jeremiah Smith, grown man.
He had maybe one ball that he had the opportunity to get and kind of slipped through his hands. Other than that, I mean, it freed up. Think about how it freed up Tate, how it allowed that Travion Henderson screen to go to the house because of so much attention.
Maybe I'll be wrong. I just think that's not a smart thing to say. I don't want to say the young man's dumb. I don't want to say that the coaches are dumb. I may say it on Tuesday morning, because that would be a dumb thing to do.
All right. A lot of talk about college football and how to tinker with the playoff, how to tinker with the schedule. A game that we adore. I tell you every year I watch all the pregame hoopla, and then, you know, 5 minutes into the game, I'm kind of out. You watch the whole game. Army-Navy. And I remember reading about this game, John Feinstein, a Civil War when I was really young. It was one of my prized possessions. This game means so much, yet there's a lot of chatter from media that cover college football that there needs to be a change here, because I mean, you're playing a national championship, you know, darn near the end of January, and the ratings have dipped. The ratings have gone down. People are saying you're just playing these games way too late into the year. Listen to what Joel Klatt, who's done a lot of Ohio State games, Joel Klatt, NFL analyst on Fox, had this to say about Army and Navy.
I believe that the Army-Navy game is one of the most special events that we have in our country, and it's getting pinched where it's at. It's getting pinched by the Heisman. It's getting pinched by the playoff. We now play a bowl game on the same day. Army-Navy needs to start the football season. Week zero of football. And mind you, I didn't say college, and I didn't say the NFL. It's because it's both. We could showcase it, man, in August and really kick things off early.
So that was Joe Klatt on his podcast. And that's sacrilegious to many, but I'm hearing more and more people. I mean, I heard Wetzel and 40 talking about needing to move the game too. It does it ratings-wise, it does well, but it doesn't do the gangbusters.
You get nearly 10 million people watching that game. For Army-Navy, you find me another. Now, they're better programs than they were, but for a long time, they were both three-win teams going into that football game. Mm-hmm. You find me a game where there's three-win teams.
But it doesn't get a rating that is so high that it's untouchable.
I've never used this phrase, I don't think, in real life or on the air. I think the media needs to go touch some grass. It's Army, Navy. It means more. I know the SEC likes that term. It means more. The game goes at the end of the year. If you want to play other games on that day,
that's what I'm thinking.
You go and you play other games at night. I understand it, but there's one game on at that time.
They've tried to make it so special that it's its only game really that day, although they did add a bowl game recently to that, but it's not a significant bowl game. Why can't you still play a playoff game or two playoff games that day?
You know, you guys, high school football is starting in the summer now. Guys, to get their season in, because they had to add another playoff game because they just had to, because we don't have enough one-win football teams playing juggernauts in Division I, but, you know, that's for another day. Start the college football season a week earlier. Just start it earlier. You figure it out. You guys want the TV money? You figure it out.
One final note, Kenny. Bob Uecker has passed away at the age of 90. Of course, the Hall of Fame broadcaster is known for... appearing in TV shows and movies.
Was on Mr. Belvedere?
Mr. Belvedere.
Frequent contributor to Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Was in the trilogy of Major League. I don't remember him from Major League 3 because I think I only saw it once.
I don't even know if I saw that.
It's forgettable, and I like to pretend that it never happened. However, I'm sure he was the highlight of it. I don't remember. He was, for a lot of people, the saving grace of Major League 2. I think Jack Partman's a great character in Major League 2 and, of course, Major League. Him and Monty up in the booth, fantastic. His exuberance, I mean, just because I didn't know when I was a small, I saw Major League, and some people are going to roll their eyes or they're going to pop their eyes. I saw Major League for the first time when I was 5 years old. Five-year-olds should not be watching Major League. I was 5 years old. My parents were pretty open about stuff, and I'm an only child, you know what I mean? And I did not know that. I thought Bob Uecker was just an actor. Again, Mr. Yeah. Belvedere, Johnny Carson, Saturday Night Live, WrestleMania. I just thought he was an actor. I did not realize he had done Brewers games at that time for 20 years and then did it for the next 30. So that was a surprise to me. And I'm like, oh, this is what a good actor. Well, yeah, he's a play-by-play guy. Of course he can do this. He's very good at that.
And he is obviously has been in high esteem. He's been a legend, you know, since the day I was born. The guy was already a legend. I wish he had more characters in the broadcast booths. I know they're always nervous to do that. The Dennis Miller fiasco, even though I still found him funny at that time. Yeah. I just think you could get a little more creative, especially when it comes to there's so many baseball and basketball games. This isn't the NFL. Like, there's so many games. Why can't we have more characters during these broadcasts? Do we really need to have journalistic integrity for 162?
Well, I disagree with you. There's guys who can do it, and then there's guys who try to do it, and they can't do it. Like, there's only going to be one Bill Walton. At least for a while. And then eventually John Fanta will take over, and then he'll be the play-by-play guy who also brings in the sideshow, which we love, John. Yeah. But he's a barrel of laughs. You see him slip on the sidewalk, I think, in New York?
Yes, I did.
Outstanding. Well, do you have enough proof that Deshaun Watson is never playing for the Cleveland Browns again, or do you need a little bit more? You like a little bit more?
Let's pour it on. Let's go.
All right, here's TMZ. They tracked down Denzel Ward, and here's the warden and his comments.
I think we need a great quarterback for real. I mean, I think the NFL, that's what it starts with. Start with that quarterback position. Once you get that solidified, then the rest of the team go follow and go carry along. So I don't think we're too far off. We need to solidify that position, though. I think he'll make a recovery. I think, yeah, the biggest thing is just probably mental right now. Like I said, there's a lot of hate going around right now, but you just can't look too deep into it. And you gotta overcome it, though. I think he'll overcome it and be better from it. He's gonna be good.
Also, the person interviewing him called Miles Garrett, Garrett Miles. In the interview there.
Where was he when they caught up with him?
Was it New York City? It looked like maybe New York. Do you know, Mitch? Do we know what city he was in?
I was going to say.
Didn't look like Cleveland.
It did look like New York, yeah.
Okay.
We don't have the intrepid TMZ reporters stationed here. Maybe if, you know, we had Johnny Manziel again, that would be the case.
Is that what we need? We need some sideshow clown for TMZ to be here? If that's true, then fine. I just need to know. Do you need any more proof? And there's another part to this as well. Like, you got him. Now, is this lip service, or do you believe that they really believe that they are close to being a good football team again? Can I run that by you again?
I don't think there's been a huge issue with them being close. And I tried to reiterate that throughout the season, even when they were losing all these games and we ended up like with a worse point differential than the winless season. I know that was an easy thing for people to look at and say, he's lost the locker room. Stefanski's lost the locker room. This team is in shambles. You know, this is back to the 0-16 Browns. This is back to dysfunctional Browns. And I'm like, I haven't really heard that from players that are actually there. It's embarrassing that they ended up 3-14.
Yeah.
And I do think they were kind of tanking down the stretch. But I think they were all just counting their days till the offseason, until next season. Because I do think they could be good again.
Here's Denzel Ward with the question about Garrett Miles.
Now, Garrett Miles, right, he goes, listen, the team ain't that bad. We're like, right there, almost there. Do you agree with that statement, or do you feel like there's, like, a lot more?
No, for sure. Like I said, I think we got a good team for real, but we got to solidify that quarterback position. You got a quarterback position, you see, it's going to take you far in this league.
Yeah, that's a TMZ reporter. I mean, she's a Hollywood reporter. I can't expect her to know who the defensive end is for the Cleveland Browns, for crying out loud.
Is that kind of a slight, like, they would never screw that up with one of the Kelce brothers? Does Myles Garrett need to...
When is Myles Garrett in all the things that the Kelce brothers
are
in?
What I'm saying.
Myles Garrett starts dating Ariana Grande. Maybe there will be a difference then.
Is Myles going to hear that and feel like a huge slight that he should be way bigger than he is?
I don't think he should. I think that his place is as a famous football player, but I don't think he's crossed
How
over...
How famous is he?
...into that mainstream... He's famous amongst football fans.
The girl just butchered his name. Didn't have any idea who he was.
She said Garrett Miles. She might have meant Myles Garrett. Could have been a slip-up. I just assumed that she's a Hollywood reporter and doesn't know who Myles Garrett is, and so said Garrett Miles. Maybe she saw the names like it's written in the government, and it says Garrett Miles like Carmen Kenneth.
Right.
Lima, you host a show with Carmen Kenneth. What's that like? Like, that's maybe what I thought that could be. Either way. He was asked about Geno Smith. Would Geno Smith tickle your fancy?
Joy, Geno Smith. We've mentioned so many other quarterbacks that could be available, and Geno has not really been one of them.
No, I didn't even think of Geno Smith. Is he a guy that would get you going at all?
Well, wait, why hasn't his name been brought up? What's his contract situation?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I never even thought of Geno Smith.
Well, for Browns fans, that's everything. The contracts are going to be really, really huge. I mean, you could tell me how great the Browns are with the salary cap and everything, but it does have to make sense, the significant cap hit that you have with Deshaun Watson.
I have to see what the contract is, but I think Geno is in a place where Geno and the Seahawks could be in a place where the Browns could be a year from now. Like, I think that they're figuring out, do we want to rebuild here, or do we want to keep this thing sliding through? I think if you were to bring in Geno Smith, I think it'd be the same exact situation. Now, I think you have to take care of him with a run game, and I don't think that Seattle did that this last year. That's why they fired their offensive coordinator, because I think they put him on an island way too many times. I think he's more of a stand-and-deliver quarterback, and they did not take care of him with a run game last year, and I think that that's what led to some of the problems that they had down the stretch, Seattle. But if you had a Kevin Stefanski system that's going to – I know, roll your eyes, everybody. If you had a Kevin Stefanski system that would try to take care of him with a run game, I'm not necessarily sure who those running backs are going to be. I think Jerome Ford is going to be a part of that, but the main cog, I'm not sure. I would like to say Nick Chubb's going to be a part of that. I'm not sure right now. I wish I could say with more solid footing. Probably one of those big pieces are going to be at the Senior Bowl or coming out in the draft here in the next 98 days. But I think that he could be taken care of a little bit with the run game. But, I mean, these are these options that we have. And you can clearly hear from Denzel Ward. I mean, they're still pretty positive. And I think now, in a level where, like, George Pickens went on, and he's a malcontent and a goofball in so many ways, but these guys are more honest than they've ever been about where these teams stand and what they need out of teams. Miles said it just a few weeks ago about things needing to change.
I feel like they've all alluded to the quarterback, which at this point is common sense.
Yes.
And I mean, obviously, they've had how many different quarterbacks the last few years?
Exactly. So you're going to have to solidify that, which I think if Denzel was just on the fan and was Denzel Ward in the afternoon, I think people would agree with Denzel because he is the $100 million cornerback for the Cleveland Browns. He's not going anywhere unless he decides to retire. Yeah, it carries a lot of weight. I mean, you have two of your main players. One, the greatest defensive player who's played for this franchise. The other one, one of the best defensive players that's ever played for this franchise, the best of the generation at cornerback. They're both saying, we have to address the quarterback situation. And they're both saying, though, that they are in a positive place with the future of the Cleveland Browns. Not with their careers, not by any means of anger or frustration. I'm sure it was frustrating to go through the year, but they're in a more positive place, which I do think speaks to me in some way because the fans are fit to be tied. I know I've been fit to be tied. And here you have two of the main voices that anybody trusts. Pretty positive about the direction of the football team all of a sudden. So it leads me to say that, yeah, Four ain't going to be back, and they're going to be looking for somebody else, and hopefully they get that conversation going and getting in the right direction because these guys only have so much time left.
Yeah, and even if these guys loved Deshaun Watson, I really haven't seen much evidence of that, but even if they loved Deshaun Watson, just looking at the very few games played over the last 4 years, I don't think any teammate of his would be able to just have that expectation that, oh, we'll be good come September. Like, how could you now? This has been so many injuries. It's been so much time off. So many games that he hasn't been able to be counted on. And then when he plays, he's not good.
Well, I can't say, and this is so, where, like, I heard you and I talked about it, that Dick and Jonathan talked about it in the afternoon. And I'll say this real quick. Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson have one thing in common. Two things in common. They were both quarterbacks of the Cleveland Browns, and they were both in a position where people could not correct them. Whether it be front office, whether it be ownership, whatever it might be. If I'm hearing from Jason yesterday on our show that this is the first time Kevin Stefanski is going to be in charge, even though Mary Kay says the complete opposite at 8:20, if this is the first time Kevin Stefanski's been in charge, then what is Kevin really going to say to Baker Mayfield in that moment in 2021 until it goes all to hell? What is Kevin Stefanski going to say to Deshaun Watson in these moments in 2023 and 2024 until it goes all to hell? So that leads to the frustration where, hey, you can like a guy, you could love a guy, but if he's not playing up to his level and you are, you're going to know that you need to make a change. There is a professionalism here. And about not having to answer about whether or not your quarterback sucks. And they had to do it in 2021, and they certainly had to do it in 23 and 24.